Welcome to Arlington Church of the Brethren.
Christ be in my mind and in my thinking. Christ be in my eyes, in everything I see. Christ be in my ears and in my hearing. Christ be in my mouth, in every word I speak.
Well, we've heard a few stories about tables and annual conference so far this service. Brother James shared about what can occur when a family shares dinner around a table. The chaos, the irreverence, and still the possible sacredness of it all. Now, Brother Everett reminded us about the life outside the tables, even on the trains and the travels and the friendships and the meetings outside of the tables. And Sister Lisa, thank you for enduring a difficult conference and for sharing your stories from your table. Well, a neat part about this conference, typically the tables are reserved for delegates. This year they offered non-delegate tables to be a part of the Compelling Vision process. So I was a table facilitator at a non-delegate table, and so I thought I would share a little bit about my experience. I'll say up front, friends, when we talked about LGBTQ inclusion in the church, the conversation did not go well. It was not fun. Some conservatives are nervous to compromise, fearing a diluting of what they view as a theological purity. And personally, I'm nervous about compromising because I don't know how to compromise on the worth and value of a human being. And I don't know how to look at someone with clear talents and say you can't contribute to the life of the church. So that part of the conversation was not fun, and to reference Lisa's story, In her most unfun moment, when she texted me, I was also in the middle of my most unfun moment. We connected 5 or 10 minutes later on break. Well, we'll come back to that. My first impression of the table was very positive overall. I was noticeably the youngest at the table. There was one maybe in their mid-40s, but otherwise I was the youngest. And everyone seemed friendly enough, though. We had pleasant talks early enough in the get-to-know-each-other stages and questions. There was Ken, who wasn't brethren, traveled from Arizona just to check out who these brethren might be, had never attended a brethren service before. Not only traveling to our conference, but sitting at a table to engage with us. Neat guy. There was Don, a brethren-lifer like myself, a pastor like myself, and an experienced conference-goer. At some point, you stop counting how many you've been to. He said maybe 30 or 40. There was Reba Berry, a delightful woman, the mother of a friend of mine from seminary. Steve, who was one of the first things Steve told us about himself, was that he was bipolar. Part of his effort to destigmatize mental illness, wanted to name that. Also, to let us know that he cares deeply about mental health ministries and how the church can better support people like himself. And Steve was a peace advocate. His number one issue probably was peace. Now, Steve is interesting. He's been ordained in the Church of the Brethren for 40 years, but because of where he lives, there's no Brethren churches available. So he's an active Quaker these days. Joanne was one of those retired but not retired pastors. You all know the type. She was in her 80s. She described her church almost as old order. For you who don't know the Brethren kind of historical code, that means extremely conservative. Not in the way we would say that today, but they probably have people in their ranks who might wear plain dress. She said even introducing a new hymn can be frustrating and difficult. And then Denise, a sweet young mother, she spent half of her time while we were talking knitting, and her breaks talking about her children back at home. One of the first things we did was we talked about ministries we're all involved with. Well, Don is doing some great work at a small to medium-sized community church. I believe when it was my turn, I talked about our Sunday school, our robust service opportunities, how our children sometimes write birthday cards to people on death row, and how we sponsor a podcast to help elevate the young adult voices in the denomination. Denise said she knows churches need to get outside their walls, and her church has been doing some incredible work of using their building to support and empower a local nonprofit. Steve, the brother and minister living as a Quaker, was involved in a few political action groups. He said he calls at least one politician every day of his life for years. He works with several peace and mental health groups specifically. Joanne is interesting. At this old order church, as she described herself, she said the average age is in the 80s. She has started an addiction recovery program inside the church. Now, let's usually when I preach, we try to engage our best selves. For just one moment, let's engage our shallowest selves. Imagine, if you will, the most stereotypical older adults, very traditional, almost old order brethren. Now imagine, if you will, the stereotypical average person who might be in need of an addiction recovery program. Just to say, probably two very different images in your head. She's bringing these people into the building, and a little bit of work initially to get the church to agree, but now they're on board and they have some success stories. They've even baptized a few people from the addiction recovery program into the life of their church. Praise the Lord. Well, when we talked about service, when we talked about ministries, when we talked about the need for ministry beyond our church walls, when we talked about outdoor ministries, our camps, when we talked about disaster relief, when we talked about any kind of service or ministry, the table had incredible agreement. A vibrant social energy, even, was quite positive, even invigorating. So then, when on day two, halfway through our very unpleasant conversation about theology, I reminded people of this energy. Do you remember yesterday when we talked about all these ministries I just shared with you? How exciting it was. How much we appreciated the lives and work we were all doing. Let's remember the connectivity, the things we do agree on, the energy we had yesterday. Our table was also interesting because there were reminders that people can run deeper than our shallow expectations when we just know one or two things about them. Don, the most conservative, or at least the most vocal conservative voice at the table, he had shared that labels are hurtful, and that given his views, people will sometimes say he is closed-minded or not loving. And he told a story about a time in 1980, he did a funeral for someone estranged from church life. He was estranged because he was gay. But the family had reached out, asked him to do the funeral. He had a chance to meet with him before he died. And given their conversation and they had a little bit of a relationship, Don felt comfortable in 1980 to say during a gay man's funeral that he was a Christian and resting now with God. He said he lost friends over that. So it hurt him to be called many years later closed-minded and not loving because of his views. I marvel at people that I consider too conservative for me, but in the circles they run in, might be too compassionate for their peers. I often remind myself these are people we should consider allies and dig deeper than the surface disagreement. On the topic of labels being hurtful, I shared a story about a church I'm familiar with, not ours, who just had more people come to a Love Feast service than members they have in the church. And yet, because they are open and affirming, the district they're in labels them by this one issue negatively. And it's almost like, hey, can we talk about this incredible love feast service we just had? There's more to our life than this one piece you disagree with. So we all agreed that labels and stereotypes are not helpful to dialogue. Joanne reminded us with words that there are more than these issues that divide us. There's human nature. We're always going to find something to disagree about. Her extremely traditional church almost split or closed a few years back because someone wanted to change the love feast. And Denise reminded us with her life, much as Everett did with his stories, while we're at these tables having these difficult conversations, she spent half of her conference worried about her family back home. It's one of the rare chances for a mom to be away from her kids was at this conference. Specifically, she shared a concern. There was a new prescription, an inhaler for one of her kids. They were trying to get it filled in time before church camp. And so she was nervous that the inhaler would be get to the kid at camp or not in time. It was. But a reminder that the life we share together goes beyond these tables and moments of disagreement. I experienced firsthand at this table the contrast of energy. Talking about the one thing we disagree on most and most passionately, that was awful. And not only is it awful, we have to be honest, it's awful in a way that's getting old, right? We've had these conversations. I say this, you say that. We don't agree, we get it. But when we moved beyond that one conversation of yes or no or for or against, we had incredible consensus and a lot of shared energy. I would go so far as to say that hearing the stories of ministry and service from everyone's lives and churches renewed and inspired many of us. A neat part about our table, we had the assigned non-delegate people, and we had one person randomly join. Their conference schedule kind of freed up, and so they thought, you know what I should do is sit at a table all week. A young 19-year-old joined our table halfway through. A college-age youth. Well, as was mentioned, this conference featured a love feast complete with foot washing. Socially, we would ask each other, when was the last time we did this? And even the most astute, faithful conference goers, brethren historians, would just go, I don't remember. Well, it turns out the Compelling Vision team asked some brethren historians to do some research. Anyone want to guess when the last brethren love feast was at an annual meeting? Well, that's the right answer. Any guesses? Go ahead. The right answer? 150 years. We have not shared a love feast at conference together in 150 years. But we did at this conference. The logistics alone of a couple thousand people washing each other's feet, imagine it. There was also this thing present at conference about who would and wouldn't come to the table. As meaningful as it was for some tables and people to participate in, there was a pain as well. Even in the middle of the meaningful love feast, to look around the table and see some empty seats. People, for one reason or another, who did not feel they could come to the table with their brothers and sisters in faith. I am honored to say my entire table came to the foot washing. Now, one missed it, Brother Don, but he went out of his way to say before he left for home that he had logistical reasons of church life to leave early, that he enjoyed our talks, and if not for having to leave, he would be at the table with us. And so, after that long week of tough and tiring conversations, we still found joy in meeting together. That as many as were able from our Compelling Vision talks came together to join in love feast together. That was meaningful. And my table experienced revival, an actual revival of spirit, of numbers, and of age. What started originally as seven people with an average age, I'd guess around 60 or so, ended as almost a dozen people, a third of which were young adults in college. The young lady who joined us invited her friends to join our table for Love Feast. And so after a long week where we spent some time talking about youth and young adult voices and young adult engagement, we had young adult engagement at our table. It was beautiful. Well, I don't mean to be overly naive, but I wonder if my table experience could have been a momentary glimpse into what might be possible between us in the Church of the Brethren. At my table, we had conservatives and progressives, the ordained and the lay, the practicing brethren and the non-practicing brethren, the brethren and non-brethren, the older adults and the college-aged young adults. And there was incredible energy on significant points of agreement, service, ministries, disaster relief, mental health work, addiction recovery work, missions, outdoor ministries, our camp, even creation care seemed to have a universal consensus at this conference. I have no idea what will come of this whole compelling vision process, but my table served as a reminder to me. When we gather around tables together, the milk will spill. Fact. But we can choose what to see and focus on. Are we stuck seeing the milk that spilled between us? Or are we willing to see beyond the spills, beyond the differences, and see the sacredness in us gathering around the table?
Christ be in my ears and in my hearing. Christ be in my mouth, in every word I speak. Christ be in my heart and in my loving. Christ be in my life, each moment that I live.